This is Encounter on VOA. Here's Carol Castillo.
Welcome to Encounter on the Voice of America. On this edition of the program, Chinese President Xi Jinping comes to Washington. Hello again, I'm Carol Castiel. Washington will be abuzz next week with visits from Pope Francis and Chinese President Xi Jinping. U.S. President Barack Obama will welcome his Chinese counterpart in his first state visit to Washington since assuming power in 2012 and since China's slowing economy and Shanghai stock market implosion have roiled world markets. The two world leaders will discuss a range of contentious issues that have chilled relations over recent years, from cyber espionage to Chinese aggression in the South China Sea. The Chinese are suspected in the cyber theft of millions of U.S. government personnel records, and China's Navy has ignored warnings over the construction of military outposts in the South China Sea. Recent turmoil in China's economy and its impact on world markets is also likely to be on the agenda. China's reported hacking of the most advanced U.S. weapon systems, not to mention the stealing of U.S. corporate secrets, is of utmost concern to Washington. But there may be points of potential convergence as well, such as on climate change. The world's largest greenhouse gas emitters recently announced an arrangement between government entities in China and the state of California to begin working toward devising cap-and-trade programs in China. This on the heels of the so-called historic accord reached in Beijing last November by Mr. Obama and President Xi, who pledged to enact policies to cut emissions significantly. China is the only non-democracy among the eight nations whose leaders have been granted an official state visit by President Obama. Well, for a preview of Xi Jinping's state visit to Washington and an assessment of U.S.-China relations, we turn to two distinguished analysts. David Michael Lampton is professor and director of China Studies at the Johns Hopkins School of Advanced International Studies here in Washington. He's the author of the recently published book, Following the Leader, Ruling China from Deng Xiaoping to Xi Jinping, which is now available in Chinese. And Patrick Cronin, he's senior advisor and director of the Asia-Pacific Security Program at the Center for a New American Security. And both gentlemen join me here at the VOA Broadcast Center in Washington. Welcome to you both.
Thank you.
Thank you.
David Lampton, let me begin with you. This state visit, as we all know, takes place amidst the U.S. presidential campaign. Many Republican contenders for the White House have been criticizing the visit that President Xi, whose country has been accused of cyber espionage and territorial aggression in the South China Sea, shouldn't be receiving this full pageantry, you know, the 21-gun salute that he's expected to get and the state dinner. Do they have a point? What's your take on the level and timing of this visit?
Well, I think at the most basic human level, you probably can't expect to adopt a strategy of humiliating your guest and then expecting major results. So I think the Chinese place a very great importance on symbolic status. And if we can make progress on some of the major issues we have between our countries, then I think a dinner and 21-gun salute is an appropriate way to achieve that.
Patrick Cronin, do you agree that a 21-gun salute and a fancy state dinner is most appropriate, or would you say some of the Republican contenders for the presidency have a point?
I think we have to distinguish, Carol, between governing and campaigning. And so if you're campaigning, you have to make a very blunt point. So really what some of the Republican candidates are really saying is that we need to be as strong as possible when we try to cooperate with China. And I don't think the president and the Democratic Party would disagree. But they are where they are. This is a state visit that was set up a long time ago, and it's now happening in the context of very complex, intricate competition as well as cooperation.
Back to you, David Lampton. What does President Xi want from this visit, in your view? Some say he's only interested in a big photo op. What's your take on what the Chinese expect?
Well, I think part of the storyline, way in which Xi is trying to legitimate himself, has to do with the resurgence or reemergence of China as a great and respected power in the world. And so coming to the United States, and he will go to Europe shortly thereafter, and he's been traveling, is part of marking and having acknowledged China's increasing importance around the world. And I think, therefore, it's important to really the legitimacy of the Chinese Communist Party. And particularly if growth begins to decline, that's certainly been a major element of legitimacy in China. If that declines, the regime then gets a boost from its increasing visibility and clout in the world. So I think this is part about legitimacy. In part, it's about real issues that he has. Certainly, about a year and a half ago, they had a major foreign policy conference. The operative phrase that President Xi used was, China will play a bigger role in the world. Certainly, the post-World War II order, the World Bank, IMF, all the alliances and so forth, China really was not a part of that. And yet, its economic position has become so enormous, its military power is growing. And so there has to be some adjustment of these institutions. And so I think high on his agenda is beginning to adjust the post-World War II order in a way that he finds more comfortable.
Turning to you, Patrick Cronin, for your take on what you think President Xi would like from this visit.
The United States and China are not forming some group of G2 summit, and yet we find ourselves in the world where we really need China and the United States to put a floor underneath the problems that they're facing, the competition that we're facing in cyberspace and the maritime area. And so it's very important to show stability on the economic front. It's very important to show that there's a path forward to manage down the differences in areas like cyber and maritime competition. But I think Xi Jinping, as Mike just pointed out, really here to continue his Chinese narrative, where China's rise is creating a new order that demands more respect for China and that gives China more security space. Now, that narrative is singular, but in fact, Americans think that, as Richard Haass, the president of the Council on Foreign Relations, recently argued, we see at least two Chinas. We see a rising, stronger China, but we also see a China that is very volatile and has a lot of challenges that Mike Lampton knows well about.
Indeed. Well, and let's just, for our listeners, clarify that David Lampton is also known as Mike Lampton here.
Thank you.
Informally. Okay. Well, back to you, David Mike Lampton, to talk about what's in it for the United States. I mean, I talked about in the introduction, and people know around the world, China certainly is on the rise and creating a new order, but one might question to what end and if it's a positive one with the cyber espionage and, of course, the aggression in the South China Sea. What are the issues, most critical issues at stake in your view, and what can this visit do, if anything, to create greater understanding and harmony between the United States and China?
Well, I think at a very broad level, since Xi Jinping has come to power, he's brought with him an entourage of leaders. And I think we could sort of summarize the situation as we don't think we have the kind of transparency into who's making decisions on what basis in China. We had come over the period from Deng Xiaoping up until Xi Jinping, we would become pretty comfortable in a way with the cast of people running China and sort of what their values were. I think we have a much higher degree of uncertainty about Xi Jinping and the people in particular who surround him. So I think just simply trying to understand that is one major objective. But certainly, more narrowly, I mean, we've just seen with the stock market problems in China and their sort of contagious effect in the knock-on effects in the world, that we really have a stake in a stable, growing Chinese economy. And for probably two decades, China's been the most rapidly growing export market for the United States, for example. It's the biggest trading partner of all our allies in Asia. And so the health of our allies in an important way depends on the health of China. So we want to encourage, to the limited degree we can, economic reform that we think will produce growth in the long run. And certainly there are other issues, climate change. China will be much more affected by climate change, as the models would indicate, than ourselves. And so they have an interest there, and we saw some movement last November, and we will, I believe, out of this summit, see marginally more progress in that direction. And then the final area is, as I've said, China's because it's increasing power in all domains, in the air, in space, on the sea, in cyberspace. These are places the United States used to dominate. And so we sort of set the rules of the road. But now we're running into, not literally, but figuratively, Chinese aircraft and ships further and further from China. Just recently, Chinese ships in the Bering Sea when President Obama was up there. So we need to develop rules of the road that we both agree to. And I think you'll hear something about that on this visit as well.
Back to you, Patrick Cronin, to get your take on what you think are the most critical issues at stake between these two powers and to what extent the visit can advance an understanding, whether it's on cybersecurity, on rules of the road regarding aggression from China in the South China Sea and so forth.
Well, at the top level, a summit meeting is both about atmospherics and about practical policy. So it is very important for the leaders of these two giant countries and economies to set a positive vision, to say that we can work things out, we can move forward, we can seize those convergent interests, and we can manage the divergent interests. So I agree with everything that David Mike Lampton said about the economy. I think climate change shows long-term vision when you think about resource scarcity and the uncertainties of the 21st century. To take a long view of that is a very healthy thing. But let me emphasize the negative side, the divergent interests, a little more, and talk about how important it will be to try to both accelerate cooperation on those issues. And I think we've seen positioning from both China and the United States in advance of the summit, kind of threatening carrots and sticks, if you will, in cyberspace and in maritime space and on other issues, in order to try to win some accommodation or understanding at the summit that will then catalyze practical policy cooperation afterward. What am I talking about? Well, let's talk about the cyberspace. It's not just that China's growing. It's that China defines cyberspace in a way that essentially undercuts their existing obligations to things like the World Trade Organization. When you have commercial hacking to support the profit of your state-owned enterprises, and you're doing it because you think that's national security, I understand why the Chinese think it's national security given their economy, but unfortunately, it really flouts the rules that we want to, yes, we were part of upholding and creating, but we think that China should be brought around over time to trying to minimize that kind of action. That's not going to happen overnight. China's not going to come and say, oh, you know what? I see your point, America. Instead, we're going to have a long, protracted negotiation both in maritime and cyberspace to narrow down the differences and manage the competition while we seize other cooperation in trade, climate change, and other issues.
We'll have more in just a minute, but first, you're listening to Encounter on the Voice of America. My guests are David Michael Lampton. He's professor and director of China Studies at the Johns Hopkins School of Advanced International Studies here in Washington. His new book is Following the Leader, Ruling China from Deng Xiaoping to Xi Jinping. It was recently translated into Chinese. And Patrick Cronin, from whom you just heard. He's senior advisor and director of the Asia-Pacific Security Program at the Center for a New American Security. That's a think tank here in Washington. We're talking about the upcoming state visit to Washington by Chinese President Xi Jinping. And this is a reminder that our Encounter podcast is available for free download on iTunes. You can find the download by clicking on the iTunes tab on our website at voanews.com/encounter. You may also follow me on Twitter at Carol Castiel VOA or connect with us on Facebook. Send an email as well to encounter@voanews.com. And here's a shout out to a faithful listener and Facebook fan, Anna Rihanna from Riyadh, Saudi Arabia. Well, back to you, David Michael Lampton, to talk about this cyber attack, cyber espionage. Because you talked about how China sees itself as a rising power and it's creating a new world order. Yes, indeed, and one that is rather uncomfortable for many here in the United States. Remember back when Unit 61398 of the People's Liberation Army stole intellectual property from American companies? Subsequently, the United States indicted five of the Army's officers, but we haven't really seen an impact on that. Some say the U.S. looks rather weak. Then, of course, hackers struck the Office of Personnel Management, stealing 22 million security dossiers. The United States recently agreed not to impose economic sanctions on Chinese businesses and individuals before Xi's visit in order for that not to overshadow the visit. But what incentives does Beijing have to satisfy the United States regarding cyber espionage allegedly tied to the government and its military?
Well, let me first of all agree with what Patrick Cronin said just a moment ago, that there are conflicts of interest here. And I think if you think about the very vocabulary that's being used in this relationship, not so long ago, the predominant word was engagement, sort of a positive notion of win-win cooperation. The word and concept you're hearing a lot more now is deterrence on both sides. That's the use of threat to get desired behavior from the other party. So I think one of the macro trends here is while we have very many common interests, we also have an increasing number of competitive interests, and we're putting threat into the equation of how to deal with China, and incidentally, China using threat with respect to the how to deal with the United States. So what the cyber question you've asked is part of a larger change in the relationship. Now, with respect to the cyber, I think there's been a very important fundamental change even in that domain. At first, it was about security of our DOD, State Department, government systems in a rather traditional security intelligence sense of the word. But what's happened, and I think particularly with the Office of Personnel Management, you have 22 million, approximately, files of Americans with personal data, social security numbers, medical reports, not to mention security background checks. And most of these people, I'm sure, aren't even in the government. They either didn't get a job to begin with, or they retired or gone on to other things. And the social security numbers, for instance, we had a major scam going on where people were using social security numbers to access IRS refund files from the Internal Revenue Service. So what I think has happened in cyberspace is this just isn't a government inside the Washington Beltway, inside story between governments. This has now become, I think, an issue where people in the United States are concerned. So I think the Chinese and others, they now have an issue that is going to have very great political ramifications.
So Patrick Cronin, do you think that the Chinese will begin to realize that they have hit an issue, this cyber espionage, that will have many political ramifications? And to that end, will that cause them to change their behavior? Do we have the tools to deter them?
Well, at the broadest level, again, I think it'll be all of the above. There's going to be more of the deterrence vice engagement, even though the engagement will continue. There will be a recalibration on the part of the Chinese. They will constantly be looking at the reaction that they're causing with their policies, both in cyber, maritime issues, but also in others. And I think the United States will also find ways to strengthen cyber deterrence, strengthen cyber offense as a way of deterrence, cyber sanctions as a way of cyber deterrence, and hopefully toward the strategic objective of negotiating rules of the road on cyberspace. And I think that's the objective, but it's going to be a very long negotiation. I think the personnel files being pilfered is classical counterintelligence and cyber intelligence and espionage. That's not going to stop, and I think the United States government knows that. But when we talk about the theft of intellectual property rights for commercial gain of state-owned enterprises, I think that's where the United States is trying to draw a very sharp distinction with the following tools. One, letting Xi Jinping know in advance of the summit, we have new sanctions in an executive order that passed in April that we will resort to after the summit if we don't hear the right things at the summit. Secondly, we may use it anyhow because it's meant to be targeted sanctions against some of the 25 teams in China who are constantly trying to steal information out of China, according to FireEye, one of the big cybersecurity private industry corporate leaders. And then finally, the United States is going to be looking for ways to use potentially cyber offensive tools as a way to deter China, and basically to make the point to Xi Jinping, look, do you really want to go down this road? You've made the assumption that we are more vulnerable somehow than you are. You may be equally vulnerable. Now, we don't want to go down that road, but this is what could be possible. So the question is, can we work things out? And I think what we'll see from this summit is the Chinese saying, look, let's reengage on the cyber, let's recreate the working group, let's think about barriers to attacking critical infrastructure as a starting point, because we agree on that. We're restrained. China's actually being very responsible, so it's essentially codifying what we're already doing. We respect their critical infrastructure, their transportation, their energy grid, their critical banking, and let's just codify that and start with that, and then see if we can grow it over time.
Let's go to another important issue, these territorial disputes in the East and South China Sea. Back to you, David Lambton. China appears to be taking steps to build airfields on two reefs in the disputed area of the South China Sea. something called the Mischief Reef, which is rather aptly
named. It's actually three now, Carol. Yeah. Sorry.
Oh, my gosh.
Subi Reef, Fiery Cross Reef, and Mischief Reef. They already had Woody Island, so this will be four runways.
There you are. Okay, the bottom line is it appears that Beijing wants a base of operations and exclusive claims to air and sea. What's going on? We've been hearing this for years, David Lampton. Why is Beijing doing this? You know, where's this going, this issue?
Well, I think there are in China somewhat different views about what China should be doing and posture it adopts in the future. But I think we have to look with a pretty cold eye at what, in fact, China has done over a protracted period of time. There was a meeting recently in London. A Chinese admiral said, and I think he probably reflects the dominant view, the South China Sea belongs to China. And so if you look at the claims China's made and where it's put resources and now these islands, it's along the perimeter of the so-called nine-dash line that was actually created before the communists came to power by Chiang Kai-shek. Mm-hmm. But nonetheless, the Chinese have taken that to be as part of the territory to which they're trying to fill out their occupation. So I think we have to take seriously that the Chinese claim this area as their, in effect, sovereign territory.
Back to you, Patrick Cronin. How do you see this dispute being resolved? Do you see the U.S. going beyond rhetorical claims and using military assets? How important is this to the United States, the fact that China is really moving in the South China Sea in such an aggressive way?
Well, the South China Sea, while it seems remote from mainland United States, is indeed the busiest waterway in the entire world. It's also a sea that has key U.S. allies that use this for all of their transit, including Japan and allies in Southeast Asia like the Philippines, but also new partners like Vietnam. But other countries are also sharing, even Indonesia, which doesn't have a territorial claim in dispute, but it has disputed waters with China. All of these countries have interests as well. So when China says there's a nine-dash line claim in history, we're not going to clarify it for you, but we're going to start building facts on the ground. That's what has people upset. So yes, the United States is going to have to work with allies and partners to put a few immovable objects in China's way, not to provoke China, but to try to slow down unimpeded runway down this field, because otherwise China will indeed make the nine-dash line a de facto reality, even before international legal tribunals can rule on the Philippines case of arbitration that is before them right now and is likely to lead to some kind of ruling next year. What does that mean? It means freedom of navigation operations on low tide elevations, artificial islands. Those are, under international law, are not entitled to 12 nautical miles of territorial waters or airspace. So if you think about Subi Reef or Mischief Reef, we could conduct a freedom of navigation operation there just to make the point of law. So we need to push back on China's unilateral changes to the status quo. China has a beef with others that we're not calling out Vietnam and the Philippines, and yes, there's something to that. But China has built 17 times more territory in the South China Sea than the other five claimants have. The other five claimants over the last 40 years, China in the last 20 months.
As we close, back to you, David Lampton. Anything you'd like to add with respect to the impact that this state visit may or may not have? Will it be a net positive? And what about the implications for the Republican Congress on which some cooperation will be required?
I would draw attention to the fact that his first stop is going to be in Seattle. I think when we talk about this visit, we've all talked about international and national level conflictual issues. But one of the most cooperative areas of our relationship is what you might call locality to locality and company to company business relationships. And Seattle's a reflection of the more cooperative dimension. And also, once you get to the localities, in this case, the state of Washington and Seattle, you find a lot more common interests between the local politicians, members of Congress, and China. So I think the trip as a whole, its itinerary reflects the international dimension. He's going to New York, the national dimension, Washington, and the locality-to-locality dimension in Washington State.
And Patrick Cronin, the last word to you with regard to the net positive of the visit or negative.
I think stability and a desire to manage differences is all we should expect, and I think that'll be positive. President Xi obviously wants to diversify and hedge starting in Seattle doing business, coming to Washington talking about policy, and then going to New York and being a permanent five member of the UN Security Council, speaking at the UN General Assembly meeting, shows his international power. So he doesn't put all of his eggs in the Washington basket or the summit meeting. It's really a much more diverse relationship.
All right. Well, we will see next week how all of this will be playing out. And we look forward to having you back on the show on a future program. I'm afraid that's all the time we have on this edition of Encounter. I'd like to thank my guests, David Mike Lambton. He's professor and director of China Studies at the Johns Hopkins School of Advanced International Studies. And Patrick Cronin, senior advisor and director of the Asia-Pacific Security Program at the Center for a New American Security. Thanks to both of you for coming in, sharing your insights.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks to Anna Zalewski for booking our guests. Encounter was produced here in Washington, and our engineer was Marty Curcius. I'm Carol Castiel. Join me again next week for another Encounter on The Voice of America.